going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I'm your host, Sean Kane, and we are jumping into week three of the NFL. Hey, I hope you took the time yesterday to listen to the week two review. I gotta say, I do think it's very important to digest what happens in the weeks, week to week. You know, you're going to have an advantage if you're listening to recap podcasts on a week-to-week basis, understanding things that other people miss in the box scores, things that the algorithms miss on sites. There's important information in those little details. So check it out. Week two review. Plus, we talked about how to exploit gray area where certain things are becoming very, very clear to the public, like who to roster, running backs and wide receivers, and which offenses look efficient and all that kind of thing, and Vegas, and which defenses you want to completely avoid. But there are things in the mid-range, the gray area, the games that aren't very sexy, not high over-unders, road dogs, things that are in those minuscule details that give you an edge on a week-to-week basis. So I recommend it. I recommend the podcast, of course. I put a little bit of work into it, so part of that is part of the reason why I recommend it. But we got a week three game-by-game breakdown. Of course, the purpose of the game-by-game breakdown, give you a sense of what Vegas has to say about the game, give you my takes on kind of an overall feel for the game. I think it's your first look at the week as a whole. And then as we move forward tomorrow into the player breakdown, you get a more specific breakdown positionally of how you can build your player pool going into the weekend. So we have the first game of the night is that Thursday night game, LA, San Francisco. Let's go ahead and jump right in here. 40-point total in San Francisco. Pretty low-scoring game. LA favored by 2 right now, but I'm going to tell you exactly who I want in this game. And this is it. This is all I want. Carlos Hyde, all day. LA giving up quite a few yards on the ground. Washington was able to pound the ball with real serious success. Their offensive line at the point of attack, 3.5 yards before contact. Very successful in that game. Carlos Hyde just sliced up Seattle. I think he's going to get the volume. I think he's going to be overlooked here. So if there's anything that I'm doing in this game, it is Carlos Hyde. You could possibly look at the pass catchers in San Francisco too. Guys, I'm off Jared Goff. I'm off the Rams. I'm not going to touch the Rams. Maybe Todd Gurley. But again, I think this San Francisco defense a little bit better than anticipated. I think you could look at some of the San Francisco pass catchers. I believe Tremaine Johnson is injured. If I remember that correctly, Tremaine Johnson suffered an injury. He may not be playing. So could be a nice spot for Pierre Garçon. But that's it. Guys, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I don't play the Thursday slates. I don't really like it. I think that there's leverage in it, but there's also it's too tempting to make poor lineup decisions, and those games just aren't always that high scoring. There's not a lot of reason. Thursday Night Football is not always it's not a very good product, so there's not a lot of fantasy slam dunks. Moving on to the main slate, although this game actually isn't on the main slate, so we don't really have to worry about it too much. Baltimore-Jacksonville, this one is in London. Of course, we know Jacksonville always playing those London games because that makes sense. I mean, North Florida and the UK, I mean, tied at the hip. I don't know, 39.5 points there. Baltimore going across the pond to play Jacksonville, who is the home team. Baltimore favored by 4 in this situation. You got to think that the Baltimore secondary can take advantage of Blake here. Blake get 3 turnovers last week. He's so turnover prone. This Baltimore secondary has created already 8 turnovers so far in the season. Absolutely filthy. Not a lot to like on the Jacksonville side. I think this is a little bit of a test for them insofar as, they have been successful. Jacksonville has been successful against on the ground. 52% success rate. That's top 10 in the league. You know, and so what can Jacksonville win at the point of attack? They did a halfway decent job in that Tennessee game, but Tennessee ultimately completely took them out of the game via turnovers and via the pass rush. I think Baltimore handles this game comfortably. There's not a lot of fantasy viability to it. They're a very good defensive unit. But this offense for Baltimore, very tame. Very tame. You know, Javorius Allen, I think, has a lot of opportunity, especially if Terrence West sits with that soft tissue injury. But against a Jacksonville unit that I think will probably bounce back from what was a bad performance last week, this game is going to, I would feel comfortable saying this game hits the under, and Baltimore controls it for a good majority. A very low-scoring, pretty boring product that they're going to put on over there in London. So we move to the main slate. Finally, Saints at Panthers. That is the first game. Carolina and New Orleans facing up in Charlotte. 47.5 point total here. Carolina favored by 5 at home. Could the Saints really go 0-3? It certainly seems like it's very possible with the way the Carolina defense has been playing. They have been quite good of late. No doubt about it. Panthers, I think the run rate, 51% run rate, the loss of Greg Olsen, plus the ability to actually successfully run the ball, positive game script, home favorites, it all sets up for us to love Christian McCaffrey. It's all there. I just tweeted this stat out. The Saints have allowed 9 receptions, 92 yards, and a half a touchdown out of the backfield to the running back position. Will Stewart continue his workload? Yes, but I think you're going to see McCaffrey continue to get snaps in this situation. We'd probably play him out of the slot a little bit. Ed Dixon is going to be a thing. He's going to replace Greg Olsen. Cam does like the little underneath routes to Ed Dixon, but I do think that this is a great spot for McCaffrey. 11 targets, 21 carries on the year. This has got to be the week. I mean, you guys heard me talk about how he almost got that touchdown the other day. I think people would be a lot more comfortable going to McCaffrey if he had actually caught that touchdown. We'd be saying, oh, look, he scored a touchdown, which immediately pops off the box score. But I think you have to like McCaffrey in this situation. You know, he actually has the higher snap rate, this higher snap share as well, 66%. On to the pass catchers, the one other guy beyond Dixon, and I think Dixon will be chalky because he's min price on both sides, Devin Funchess. Marshawn Lattimore going to be covering Kelvin Benjamin, and we saw Funchess get quite a few targets just last week. He's sneaky good. He's cheap. He's $4,800. You know, opposite of Marshawn Lattimore, who has been really good, if you want to attack this with a wide receiver, I think you get yourself bunches of Funchess in your lineups. I don't think I'm going to play Cam. I don't know what to project for him. He hasn't had a good completion rate. You know, yes, I like his weapons. I like their probability of being successful. And obviously, by proxy, I think you can like Cam. But at his price at $8,100, I haven't seen something from him that tells me that he's got 3 touchdown upside. I do think that he will get a touchdown, you know, to McCaffrey or get one to Funchess. I think that they have decent volume in this situation. But I just don't see Cam scoring, you know, I don't see that the Panthers putting up 24, 30 points in this game. I see them, you know, steadily keeping the Saints offense in check because their defense looks phenomenal right now. I mean, they have barely allowed any scoring in their last 2 games. So, you know, on the Saints, I think the only guy that you really, really want is probably Michael Thomas and Drew Brees. There's going to be a Michael Thomas game, guys. I mean, at some point you have to we have to understand that Michael Thomas is going to continue to exploit his massive target share in that offense, which is almost 30%, I believe. Drew Brees on the road, not my favorite, of course. But, you know, if there's a negative game script for the Saints, they're going to have to throw the ball. And if you want to do anything, it's not the running game. It is the secondary, and Michael Thomas should be able to take advantage of this secondary, at least with some success. I mean, Pierre Garçon did in week one, and I think it's very easy to project him for a similar line in this situation. Tampa Bay, Minnesota, this one is hasn't set a line yet, and I think that's probably because we're waiting on Bradford news. But I have to think that Minnesota has a slight edge here. As a home favorite, or just as a slight edge with the home defense there. Tampa Bay run defense looked pretty good. I really want to start to play Dalvin Cook. It worries me that they are going to rely on him so heavily without Bradford, without any real passing threat. Tampa Bay can stack the box. They stuffed the Bears. That's not much, okay? But 20 yards on 16 attempts for a team that likes to run the ball, and the Bears, I mean, that's just complete shutdown. And you don't necessarily want to risk a complete shutdown of an every down back. Investing in Dalvin Cook seems like maybe this is not the best spot. As for the Bucs offense on the road, obviously Mike Evans, D-Jax, you guys heard me talk about them yesterday. They're going to get deep opportunities. They're going to get red zone opportunities. They certainly could be in a good spot. But the Minnesota defense has had some tougher matchups. And I think, you know, Ben, Breeze, and now, you know, Jameis is not exactly Big Ben at home or Drew Brees. His accuracy, his propensity for mistakes, I think you could see a much more tame game plan from Dirk Cutter here and make sure that he limits the mistakes from Jameis Winston. But of course, Mike Evans always in play. He's almost uncoverable. But I will say, I don't think he's a must have against Xavier Rhodes, who shut down Antonio Brown. Now, I don't mind D-Jax, who will be running opposite, who got some deep targets there, but I think it's tournament only, and I'm a little bit hesitant to do that. Jaquizz Rodgers, not interested. This rush defense has been pretty stout for the most part. And, you know, Rodgers, like I mentioned the other day, not exactly a lot of burst. There's not a lot of upside in Jaquizz Rodgers. I mean, you saw a good Jaquizz Rodgers game last game with Chicago. Positive game script. He got in the end zone, 50 yards. I mean, that is kind of a good Jaquizz Rodgers outing. So I think the only reason you go to this game may be for ownership leverage, because a lot of people think it's kind of ugly. We'll wait to see what Vegas says about it, and if they're pointing something out that we might need to pay attention to, then we might change our mind. But I think this game is pretty slow, pretty boring. Two defenses that want to establish themselves, and two offenses that are okay being very very conservative. Broncos, Bills. Broncos, one of the highest offensive success rates in the league. Second in plays run behind the Pats. Trevor Siemian is the highest scoring fantasy quarterback in the NFL. 700 total yards of offense, a 56% success rate. On the road in Buffalo, they are favored. This is a 40-point total, and the Broncos getting their 3-point edge as they go out to northern New York. Listen, the Bills have been pretty effective as a defensive unit. Now, two, you know, bad offenses, and I do kind of feel comfortable saying that I don't really think the Carolina offense is that good right now. I mean, unless they pop and show me something, I just haven't seen it. But the Jets, obviously, not very good. Not one rusher over 40% success rate against them. In fact, most of them are below 40% success. But C.J. Anderson has been excellent of late. Hard to believe that on the road, though, he is going to be super-duper productive. You know, I think he has the elevation advantage in Denver at home. That's always nice. The first game of the year against L.A., he wasn't explosive, but he was productive. I think the Bills, if there's one thing that they are going to try to do, it's going to try to make sure that their front seven slows down C.J. Anderson and force Trevor Siemian to beat them. You know, I think that still on paper is what they want to do. They limited Jonathan Stewart and Christian McCaffrey to, I think it was under 60 yards in that Carolina game. I know Jonathan Stewart only had 40 yards on 12 attempts. So I'm not in love with CJ Anderson on the road. I'd much rather take him when he's at home in Mile High. I do think that you could probably look at Simeon again here in this situation. I mean, Thomas and Sanders have just been excellent. And you have two guys who I think the comp that I want to make here is to Funchess and Benjamin. Benjamin and Funchess were pretty productive last week. Neither of them got in the end zone, but they had a decent amount of targets in that game. And they were capable, you know, they demonstrated that it's not exactly an elite. It's not exactly an elite secondary. Week two, they both had 8 and 7 targets respectively, 77 and 68 receiving yards, over 10 yard A dot, and over 10 fantasy points with 20% target share for each. We saw Sanders and Thomas both get 26% of targets in that last game against Dallas. That's about where they are. If you're talking about a Denver team that maybe is going to struggle to run the ball, I think Simeon could make one of those guys pay. And I think, you know, you look at the size profile, Kelvin Benjamin profile is very similar to Demaryius Thomas, and he was successful last week. So that I would be okay with Demaryius Thomas at 8 receptions for 89 yards and a touchdown. I think that might go a little bit under-owned. I'm not touching the Bills. Listen, Denver elite defense, no matter where they are in the Bills offense, really did struggle against an elite defense in the in Carolina. I mean, barely able to get into the red zone. LeSean McCoy unable to establish anything. They clearly proved that they know how to stop elite runners with Zeke. They addressed that issue. Tyrod's fine, but he's not going to be able to get a lot done against these corners. They don't have enough wide receiver talent for them to take advantage. This isn't Dez Bryant. So moving on. Pittsburgh at Chicago. Big Ben on the road. Gosh, I wish this was at home. Ben on the road, proving questionable. You know, I mean, we know the trend is there. We tried to get after him in Cleveland, and he was so-so. No question that he can get a win here, but I think it's better, more of a good real-life football game than a good fantasy football game. I think it's really on the back of Le'Veon Bell. Very effective on the road, averaging 20 fantasy points on the road as a favorite. I think he gets in the end zone here. We saw the snap rate was up. We saw the opportunities, 30 opportunities last week against Minnesota. Chicago's defense, not particularly good. Just inefficient. I mean, allowing offenses to move the ball. And if you're going to give this team opportunities in the red zone, Le'Veon Bell got, I think it was 5 red zone touches just last week. So, you know, you have to like Lev Bell on the road, who when Big Ben struggles, he is much more successful. They're favored by a whole touchdown, implied for 26 points, which is one of the higher numbers on the slate. So you certainly are interested in Lev Bell. And I think as far as the pass catchers go, you know, listen, we've seen the big profile wide receivers or big body wide receivers do well. Mike Evans did very well against this Bears secondary. We saw Julio Jones do some damage. He was kind of didn't get a lot of volume. But I do think that Antonio Brown could be interesting here. He does suffer when Ben struggles. But I mean, we saw him in that Cleveland game, and this team is just so inefficient that you could very easily get people who are playing Lev Bell to overlook Antonio Brown. You know, the deep middle of this field specifically is where Chicago seems to struggle. Antonio Brown runs, we know he can run a route, deep middle slant. I don't know. It's not my favorite place either. I mean, it's a slow field. Antonio Brown doesn't really suffer on grass the way a lot of other receivers, but this is a slow field. Like, this field plays slow for a reason. So I don't know how much interest I have in it. I think it's Lev Bell. I'm not touching the Bears. I don't think you have to touch the Bears. I don't care how cheap they are. I think that they, I mean, we saw a Minnesota offense that's much more competent, struggles to score a touchdown, only one touchdown against this Pittsburgh defense at home. I think the Pittsburgh defense is going to be able to put a lot of pressure on Mike Glennon and just be inefficient. I mean, just completely be inefficient. They are very much in play. Miami and the Jets. Oh, Miami's offense. Oh, I love Miami here. 30 opportunities for Jay Ajayi. Are you kidding me? This is one of the most ineffective defenses in the league against all skill positions. We saw LeSean McCoy slice them up. He's going to see positive game script even on the road. Plenty of volume here in an early season divisional game. Listen, they've allowed 9 explosive runs this year, 137 yards and over 1 touchdown per game, 6-plus receptions per game to the back. Ajayi is in a beautiful position to get 30 touches, 100 yards, and a touchdown. I am in love with Jay Ajayi this week. I feel very comfortable with him in cash games. I think that, you know, the price, the point per dollar, 8.2K, you're going to easily be comfortable. I think you can comfortably this week spend a reasonable amount of quarterback, put Ajayi and Left Bell in your lineups and feel comfortable about it. I feel comfortable with that approach this week, even though they are on the road. Now, there are some home favorite running backs that I really like that I'm not going to ignore, but I think that as far as volume goes, volume and opportunity, it's king for Left Bell and Jay Ajayi against bad defenses. Listen, they've allowed the Jets have allowed 50 total points to wide receivers in combined per game. So you have to be interested in Jay and the wide receiver stack. No doubt about it. We saw their willingness to air it out. Massive number of air yards for Devontae Parker and Kenny Stills. Over 40% air yards market share for Devontae Parker, who was getting a ton of deep shots from Big Play Jay. You know, Jarvis Landry, I think people will be attracted to how successful he was on all of those, you know, those routes. And you got to love that Jay was able to find him. You know, he's going to get that slot left. Crabtree lined up on the left last week, and that's where we saw him eat. That left side of this Jets secondary is very, very exploitable. So I certainly think that Jarvis Landry is in play. One of my favorites has to be Kenny Stills. I do think that Kenny Stills goes overlooked, and as far the Jets have been really bad on deep routes, and he got 5 targets. I think almost every single one of them was deep. So Kenny Stills is an interesting tournament play to kind of, you know, blow this thing wide open. And yes, I'm going to play Jay Cutler. Yep. Smoking Jay. I think he feels comfortable with Gase. Like you have to respect the fact that what he did on the road in LA in week 1, it's not massive, but the productivity was there. And if they were just able to get it into the end zone a few more times, I think you see the risks that Gase is willing to take pay off. And I want to be early on that rather than late. So I am good with attacking the Dolphins. I'm not playing the Jets. here's the thing. Is the Miami secondary exploitable? Yes. But is Jermaine Kearse Keenan Allen? No, let's not overreact. I mean, and the Oakland secondary is bad. You could definitely do Jermaine Kearse, but I just think that on a full slate, I don't think you have to do Jermaine Kearse as a home dog. Will they be a negative game script? Yes. Is it tournament viable? Fine, but that's a cop-out. So I'm going to just say Jermaine Kearse is not on my short list of my favorite wide receivers on the week, but I do think it is acceptable to use him as a point per dollar value. Giants, Eagles. God, the Giants look bad, man. That game, I sat down. I was at the bar with a buddy, and I turned to him and I said, Lions win this game. No doubt in my mind, Lions win this game. And he's like, all right, whatever. Sure enough, man, I don't want to say I called it, but I fucking called it because the Giants look bad. Listen, last year, that defense bailed them out, but they had the exact same problems in the beginning of the season. Eli is a statue. He's a 36-year-old statue who can zing the ball, but he's better. I mean, he should be a quarterback's coach for a high school team, throwing deep routes. I mean, like, come on, man. It's Eli. Let's be done here. They don't look good. The offensive line is terrible. They're allowing massive sacks, number of hurries. They can't run the ball. They're the worst. Josh tweeted out a stat that Paul Perkins has only seen a stacked, hasn't even seen a stacked box once this year. And he has averaged 1.9 yards per carry. He hasn't even seen a stacked box. What does that say about this offensive line? They cannot move anyone. The Eagles pass rush very firmly in play. They are terrifying. Almost 10 plus hurries per game, two sacks, only allowing a 42% success rate to the rush. Did they struggle against Kareem Hunt? Yes, but I do think that there's something to be said against a terrible offensive line, that this the strength of this team is in the front seven. And I think that the Philadelphia defense could have a nice day. The key matchup, however, is Odell, right? Obviously, it's a key matchup anytime the Giants are here. I think what stands out to me was last week I was on Tyreek, right? And the reason I was on Tyreek is because Philadelphia's secondary is exploitable via the deep ball. Well, it seems like they probably watched their film last year and they're letting the underneath stuff go now. So a little bit of a flip the script there. They're trying to let guys not get behind them, but they did take out Tyreek. I mean, they concentrated all of their efforts on Tyreek. They put the safety on him rather than on Kelce. And usually that safety help on Kelce is what people said, hey, listen, Philadelphia is an elite unit against the tight end. They were in 2016. Well, Kelce ran wild because they just didn't necessarily account for him with more than one body, and he's such a massive athlete. So Odell across the middle interests me. Sterling Shepard out of the slot could be interesting as well. And Evan Ingram looked good, but I think everything on this team starts and ends with the offensive line. And if I don't really love the way your offensive line is protecting your quarterback and your quarterback can't move his feet, there's going to be too many risks that this team just can't score. And I think that is a very, very legitimate fear. As for the Eagles, I think they win this game. I think they sell out to stop OBJ. They get to Eli. It's a bad, bad day for the Giants in, not in Citizens Bank. It's a bad day for the Giants in Philadelphia. Wentz throwing the ball at 61% rate. He's kind of tempting, but only if Janoris Jenkins has to sit again. That was the thing that tipped me over the edge, was Matt Stafford is going to be able to throw the ball against his secondary that is good, but not elite without Janoris Jenkins. When you get Janoris Jenkins to completely take someone away from that offense, then you've got a real serious issue. So if Jenkins doesn't play, then I think we have to consider Alshon Jeffrey, 7,500, 25% target share, kind of sneaking up there on a team that we know they don't have a running back. They're comfortable slinging the ball. They threw it like 50 times in Kansas City. So, you know, why not? Philadelphia, I think, could be a sneaky play if Janoris Jenkins sits, but that's a big if for me. Falcons, Lions, this game turns me on. All right. Sorry, I'd be direct. I want shares of this. Two offenses with above average success rates in both matchups on turf, a home dog quarterback, and both quarterbacks are currently 3-4 in passer rating. With healthy weapons, they're both 2-0. These teams are both pretty solid offenses. This game could shoot out. I would bet the over. I have no problem going over to mybookie.ag, entering the promo code LOGIC, mybookie.ag, online sportsbooks, best, fastest payouts in the industry, by the way. Bet the over. I'm betting the over, man. This boy, this could go. This game could go back and forth and back and forth. Plenty of balls flying around in the dome up there in Detroit. And Matt Stafford just looks so comfortable. He looks so good. But so did Matty Ryan. I mean, it looked excellent, excellent, excellent. Did Atlanta pass? They're just balanced. They're just very balanced. I think on the Atlanta side, I love Mohamed Sanu. I talked about him yesterday, guys. He's underpriced. 5.4K. He's going to get Quandre Diggs in the slot, the primary space that he ends up. You're going to have the attention of Julio lining up all over the place. Darius Slay in the secondary, worried about him. All Sanu does is catch the rest of the balls that Julio doesn't catch. I think that you're going to see a good, listen, Yusuf Fitz get 13 targets against this offense out of the slot. Now, is he going to line up out of the slot all the time? No, not necessarily. But I do think Sanu is in a good position here, especially if the Detroit offense can keep themselves in this game and force Atlanta to throw the ball. I don't mind Julio, not at all. I think Julio in a dome on the road, tight spread, ugh. Always, definitely. And I think Austin Hooper very much in play. He's a risk. He just has not seen viable volume yet. But we saw an athletic young tight end in Evan Engram last night exploit Detroit. That's the one space where you can really exploit this offense is off the tight end. And I think you know for a fact that they were watching that game last night and they saw Evan Engram run wild on that linebacking core. They're just not that great in coverage. Austin Hooper could be a risky but profitable play. Key stat, you ready for this one? Both of these teams, top four in running back production in the passing game. 80 yards per game to the running back. Oh, baby. Are we interested in Tevin Coleman? Are we interested in Theo Riddick? Yeah, we are. Why not just fucking game stack this thing? All the way up. Just game stack. Get yourself four or five different pieces of this game because I honestly think this could hit the over. As for the Lions, it's high time, man. Amir Abdullah looked sharp last night. Getting to the edge, he's so fast. We forget. You watched him in Nebraska and you were like, oh my God, this guy's a burner. And he's been off the field for so long. He's so, so fast when he gets on that edge. Listen, they may struggle in game script. The game script might not favor him, but you know they're going to try to run the ball to play a little bit of keep away. He has two red zone opportunities per game. He went for 86 yards last night. What's interesting to me, however, is the thing that people may overlook. Yes, Theo Riddick in a negative game script is going to be excellent. Yes, we saw him produce in the way that Theo Riddick does in that Arizona game. However, pump the brakes. You saw Amir Abdullah get 18 carries yesterday, right? Well, in the Arizona game, they kept him on in certain passing situations, and he had three targets. So if you're telling me that Amir Abdullah, who's cheaper than Theo Riddick, is going to get 18 carries against the Arizona run defense and possibly three targets, I'm interested, especially in tournaments when people are going to gravitate towards Riddick because he's a little bit more of a known commodity. And don't get me wrong, I love Theo Riddick. He's basically a slot receiver. They throw the ball so much in Detroit. It's like a 70% rate right now. That all of those guys are viable, but every single handoff is going to go to Amir Abdullah, and there's going to be situations when Stafford checks out of the pass. By the way, or checks out of the run, and Abdullah is still on the field, and he's going to get little dumps. Vic Beasley's out. Ooh, there's your run stuffer. So if you want to gash this Atlanta offense and figure out what are they capable of doing. I mean, Ty Montgomery was capable of doing it. I think Amir Abdullah very capable. As far as wide receivers for Detroit, I think you got to look towards the left side. Marvin Jones, Golden Tate should see the volume. I'm going to avoid Desmond Trufant, who probably will get Galladay on the right. I don't know if Trufant will follow Golden Tate. I'm going to have to pay attention, read some industry stuff to see, if he's going to shadow or not. He may just get on Galladay and take him out of the game. But Golden Tate, the volume is always there. Over 25% market share on the regular. We've seen Marvin Jones be on two separate games. We've seen Marvin Jones catch touchdowns because that's what Marvin Jones can do. He can stretch the field and he can get into the end zone. So it's a great spot. I love this game quite a bit. Houston, New England. This is a massive favorite here. New England, the highest favorite on the day. They are 43 point total. New England 13 point favorites in Foxborough. Instantly, you see a home favorite that's this heavy. You see a team that you know is going to win in the Patriots. Running back, Mike Gillisley all day. I'm interested in Mike Gillisley for sure. Yes, Tommy Brady, no doubt about it. Because if Gillisley gets the volume because of positive game script, then Tommy Brady is going to have been successful. But here's the thing. Highest run rate inside the red zone, most plays run in the red zone, most plays run, period. They are going to be up in this game. There's no doubt about it. They're going to score some more points. I think the Houston defense, we clearly exploitable via the run. We saw that against Jacksonville, who, you know, high success rate on the rush, but New England also high success rate with Gillisley. I think Gillisley's my favorite piece in this game. And I've heard some rumblings about Brandon Cooks. We're going to wait. I'm going to see what his matchup looks like on the corner, who they expect to be guarding him. It's just a matter of time before Cooks takes advantage, of one of these secondaries. And, you know, it's got to happen soon. They took AJ Green away, but he lines up on the opposite side. Remember, Cooks is right on the right side versus AJ on the left side. So I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting to go to New England as massive home favorites. They're going to score. They're going to score plenty of points. There's nothing to be afraid of with the New England offense. They're just pricey. As far as Houston goes, no. I mean, Deshaun Watson is going to get smoked in Foxborough. Like, do you guys remember this game last year with Brock? Like, it was the most depressing Houston game. It was like 28-3 in the first half. And I just don't think Houston, I mean, Belichick's got O'Brien's number. He got a rookie quarterback who I was reading Sean Fahey, Football Outsiders QB analyst. He just has massive issues with Watson's velocity. He's like, this guy does not throw the ball hard enough. And that was the issue that everybody had with him at Clemson. City just doesn't throw the ball hard enough. And I think it's a matter of time before that comes to bear. And, you know, Patriots, they're not going to give up the most passing yards to wide receivers every single week. This could be a week where they really right the ship and they kind of regress back to a manageable defense. I just don't see them getting gashed all year long. So, yes, I do like DeAndre Hopkins because he has a 48% target share. Never seen that. Never seen that in my life. Leading the league in targets right now, 48% target share. It's literally like DeAndre walks up to Deshaun Watson and goes, there's nobody else in the stadium except for you and me. Just throw me the ball every fucking time. And it works because he's an elite wide receiver. Can we please get him on a different team, though? God, man. Browns, Colts. What a wonderful world. The Browns are road favorites. Come on now. Makes sense. You got to think they can get over on the Colts. Let's go, Hugh Jackson. Let's get one for Cleveland, for the land, baby. Listen, if Isaiah Crowell and this quote-unquote elite offensive line, which has only rushed, hasn't even eclipsed 100 rushing yards this year, is ever going to do it, this is the spot. But it really feels hard to project Isaiah Crowell. 41% rushing success, that's not good. 35 yards per game and one target. Okay, yikes. That's not exactly why we drafted him in the second round of season long. Duke Johnson, very interesting because we know he's going to get extra volume in the passing game. No Corey Coleman. I think that those targets for Duke Johnson are going to be very comfortably coming in the slot, and they've lined him up in the slot plenty. He is a utility man. He is their James White. He can go to the slot. So Duke Johnson, very interesting. Feels a little bit more like he has a safer floor because you know he's going to get passing volume, and he looked great in that game in Baltimore. So I think Duke Johnson very much in play, Isaiah Crowell in play, Rashad Higgins, we all know he is the flavor of the week as far as waiver wire acquisitions go. And hey, DeShone Kizer can find him. DeShone Kizer can find him if he's, you know, not going to turn the ball over four times like he's done in his last two games, then I think he could have a nice game. And Kizer, even on the road, in the dome, I think Kizer probably has, you ready for this? I think Kizer has more fantasy points than Carson Palmer did in week two. It's a hot take. Oh, I'm nervous. All right. Anyway, on the Colts side, if T.Y. Hilton can do anything, he's got to do it here. And he's got to do it with Jacoby Brissett under center. There's reason to like Hilton, okay? 22% target share in the season. The Browns have allowed a 117 passer rating to his right side of the field and two touchdowns. Come on, T.Y. I got season-long shares of T.Y. because I thought for sure, I was certain that Andrew Luck's torn labrum was not a thing. I was like, they're bullshitting us. He's going to be fine. This guy is tough, tough cookie. Nope. That's how my season, one of my season long teams is going. Anyway, I don't think T.Y. Hilton is cash viable, though. I mean, $6,700 is a great price for T.Y. Hilton. Let's just be very clear about this. This man has 120-yard, two-touchdown upside. There are only so many guys who can play as fast as he plays in that dome. And he's got to get volume. He's got to get volume against the Browns. No doubt about it. We saw Antonio Brown gash them. T.Y. Hilton, just as good as far as yardage goes as Antonio Brown. Not quite as good. That's an exaggeration. I don't want anybody adding me on Twitter like, come on, man, T.Y. Hilton for Antonio Brown. What are you, crazy? Sorry. Okay. Antonio Brown, elite. T.Y. Hilton, pretty elite. Damn good. I mean, if fucking Andrew Luck was here, we would be locking T.Y. Hilton in all formats. Frank Gore, too, man. He's still the most likely Colt to score a touchdown. He has been for the last, 12 years? Most likely Colt to score. Him and Jack Doyle. Jack Doyle, really, really productive. We just saw Jack Doyle. I think I talked about this. Fucking Ben Watson went 8 for 8 in his game, and Jack Doyle is also getting massive volume. And I think Brissett's going to look for him. He looked for him last game. He had his highest completion rate to Jack Doyle. So I don't know. Yes, you can go with the Colts offense. Yes, you can go with the Browns offense. I don't think you have to, but I think there's salary relief here in this game, and it's hard to project. Let's just call it that. Seattle, Tennessee, sneaky effective, very productive on the offensive side, 54% success rate on all plays. Derrick Henry might be starting here, okay? Now, listen, Linda, you have to consider him. Tennessee has been hammering the run. They've been going 50-50, which I know people are like, 50-50, that's not hammering the run. Well, it is, considering the game scripts that they've been in. They've been really wanting to run the ball. We know Mike Mularkey loves to run the ball. They could be in positive game script here at home. They're home favorites. It's a very, it's a pretty tight spread, 22-19, 42 total points in this one. But they are, favored by a field goal. At home, and Seattle, just, we know their offense isn't good on the road. They didn't look good against San Francisco at home either. I mean, their offensive line is terrible. They have one offensive touchdown to show for the two games in the year, and they have gotten, they have one of the highest hurry rates in, I have the stats here. Why don't I just read this? The Titans have the highest hurry rate in the league, and Seattle allowing 11 hurries a game. That's third most in the league, a 7% sack rate. That's massive. This is a big problem. Wilson could be running for his life in this game. And we know this Tennessee secondary, very exploitable. But those numbers are skewed a little bit because they played such an elite pass offense in the Oakland game. They shut down the Jacksonville passing offense. They shut down the Jacksonville run offense. I don't really know what Seattle is going to do here. They could shit the bed and they could go, they could take another L. I really do think that. Because they have been able, they've been susceptible to the run. I mean, Carlos Hyde just went out for over 120 yards against them. And Derrick Henry, he can get it done between the tackles. He's a young back, he's a bruiser, and they have allowed volume. They have allowed productivity between the tackles. As long as you avoid the edges, you avoid Michael Bennett, you can create production against this Seattle offensive line or defensive line. So the problem is you're not getting a good discount on Derrick Henry. FanDuel priced him well. He's actually priced, I think, just this almost the same or just as expensive as DeMarco Murray. So yikes. Listen, the only people in Seattle that I'm possibly considering, Paul Richardson on the left side of this formation. His snap rate went down last game. That kind of made me mad, but we saw him against a mediocre secondary in Green Bay, and he was one of the most targeted guys there. Doug Baldwin, hyper-efficient in a negative game script, very interesting. I just think Seattle could lose this game. They're not good on the road. Jimmy Graham is questionable, and Tennessee's defense seems to just be pinning their ears back. And if they're capable of running the ball at all, this game is over. I mean, you're going to know very quickly if Tennessee is running the ball successfully. I think that you are going to see Seattle really, really struggle in this one. Kansas City at the Chargers. Kansas City is a road favorite because Vegas expects the Chargers to blow a field goal. They are 3-point favorites. But I like the Chargers pass game. Kansas City allowing 32 points per game to the wide receiver. They're going to be in negative game script against an offense that has been very productive. None of this is deep. This is the Andy Reid thing, right? He's bend, don't break. He'll let you go to the red zone, but once he gets to the red zone, he's going to try to turn that offense into a field goal machine. And I think you can get the volume that is sustainable from a guy like Keenan Allen. And I have no problem with the guy who's getting a 27% target share. Listen, Tyrell, 20%. If we're looking at the left side of the field, Allen has seen a 33% target share when he lines up there in short left or intermediate routes. All right, that's pretty damn good volume, and that seems to be where Kansas City is allowing the production. He did it against Denver. Kansas City is not Denver. We saw Alshon Jeffrey productive on the left side of the field. I think Keenan Allen could have a nice game as well. Tyrell, though, right behind him with plenty of underneath targets as well. He's got a 20% target share in this offense. Listen, Tyrell Williams is going to have a game, and we want to make sure we never forget that this guy has big play potential. Will he do it against the Chiefs? I don't know. I can't say that with confidence. I liked him last week a lot more against Miami, a much more susceptible secondary, and he kind of was so-so. I think Keenan Allen is probably the play. Negative game script, he's going to soak up targets. Last week, I was successfully almost called his line. All right, let me see if I can do it again. Keenan Allen, 9 receptions, 85 yards. Touchdown. 9 receptions, 85 yards, and a touchdown. Chargers lose this game, though, I think. I do think. Kansas City, we might have to pump the brakes on Kareem Hunt. Chargers only allowing a 41% success rate, not allowing a lot of run yardage to the running backs. They seem to be stuffing up that run pretty, pretty good. I do think Tyreek Hill is in play. They have allowed passing success. We saw that with Jay. Okay. And here's the annoying part. I do think that it's Chris Conley or Albert Wilson who might be able to find one here. That's the obnoxious part. But I don't, there's not enough good data on Chris Conley and Albert Wilson, their snap rate. I mean, the snap rates, who's got the higher? Let me look at some Kansas City data here about these guys real quick to give you guys even a little bit more information. Okay, so Conley and Wilson both have 8 targets on the year, decent catch rates. Conley has more air yards and a deeper A dot. Okay. Conley is the big play guy. I think, 25% target share of air yards. So I think if you want to go to anybody, it's probably Conley. But Tyreek Hill, I'm very, very interested in him. Is Travis Kelce, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to do that. I don't mind actually. Sorry. I don't mind Hunter Henry either. I think that his snap share and his volume is there. And we talked about it. They can support 2 tight ends in this offense. But he's not my favorite. Like I would Hunter Henry or Austin Hooper. Even though the volume isn't necessarily there, I think that it's still a good spot. Cincinnati, Green Bay, Ty Montgomery, home favorite, 7.2K, possibly no Jordy, possibly no Randall Cobb. Cincinnati's whole shebang is fucked. Yeah, volume and opportunity, 88% snap rate, over 1 red zone attempt per game, 2 touchdowns. We know the passing volume is there. Cincinnati has been good against the pass this year. Deep routes, they're just not. But they played 2 mediocre offenses. Fucking Houston and Baltimore, those aren't elite passing offenses, guys. I mean, Joe Flacco, hashtag elite. We know he is an elite quarterback. But Cincinnati limiting production to the wide receiver. I just love saying Joe Flacco is elite. I had a roommate once who used to start every football argument that he would talk about. He's like, I understand what you're saying about the Patriots, but here's 2 things. 1, Joe Flacco is elite. And 2, the Patriots have a bad schedule. Like everything was Joe Flacco is elite. And it was just so obnoxious and hilarious. Anyway, so Cincinnati, mediocre. I do think that Aaron Rodgers is a home favorite here, very firmly in play. I'm playing with Ty Montgomery. Ty Montgomery is going to continue to be a huge offensive weapon for this team. You know, I think on the Cincinnati side, sorry. We just saw, by the way, Martellus Bennett get massive target bump when Cobb left. Now, he wasn't able to do anything with it, but I think there's something to be said for Martellus Bennett, for sure. If they figure out that timing and they look at the film, they figure out what was wrong with their routes, if he gets those targets again, you got to kind of consider him as a possible tight end play. Cincinnati, the whole world's going to play AJ Green, just an FYI. 7,500, he's been quiet. Love him. I love this spot. They have to keep up with Rodgers. The secondary is mediocre. We saw Julio torch them deep. AJ, unguardable. I'm very much into AJ Green. I have no problem with AJ Green. Over 10 targets, no doubt in my mind. The question is whether or not he can break one off. I'm not touching the Cincinnati running backs. I don't know what to do with them. It doesn't make any sense to me what they're doing. I have no idea. We got a new offensive coordinator, but I do see AJ Green getting pumped with targets here. Dalton trying to shake off the rust and fire the ball, I think, in rhythm to Dalton. So Green, 30% target share, no problem. And this lining up in the same spot, Julio lined up in on the left side. Love him. Oakland, Washington, this is the Sunday night game. Like this one a lot. Cousins as a home dog on Sunday night. Interesting. Now, Josh tweeted out earlier that Kirk Cousins does have hashtag issues with a slow start, okay? First of all, wait a second, I'm sorry. The fact that I just said hashtag issues is firmly obnoxious, and I do apologize for doing that. I'm going to move on. Kirk Cousins has issues with the early season start. After week 5, he really seems to pop. And Fern brought up these stats on RotoViz and tweeted him out. And he said it's true. There's data to support it. But Cousins is a home dog. I like it. You know, they ran the ball 55% of the time in L.A. last week. And everybody goes, oh, no, Kirk Cousins isn't going to throw the ball. We thought this was going to be a volume passing offense. Guys, come on. Listen, they were winning that whole game. They were crushing them at the point of attack, 3.5 yards before contact. The offensive line, literally, probably on every single huddle, was just going, run it again, run it again. They got nothing. They got nothing. And they did. They did. Why, you know, what's the point? What's the point in risking it if you know you can win at the point of attack? I don't have a problem with Kirk Cousins this week. It's 70%. They threw the ball 70% of the time when they were down to Philadelphia. They're comfortable throwing the ball. You saw volume for Terrell Pryor in that negative game script. I think Terrell Pryor should be able to take advantage of this matchup against Oakland. We saw Jermaine Kearse exploit them. You have to think that McCown Kearse is not necessarily the fantasy duo that Cousins Pryor is. Come on, man. Let's do it. 22% target share for Terrell Pryor. Oakland not allowing a ton of running back success. So, I like Cousins in this situation. They're going to have to throw the ball. He's a home dog. Hidden consistency for quarterbacks as home dogs. I think this one could be high scoring so long as the Redskins can stay in it. And I talked about this. Oakland game scripts are going to set up well for the opposite team because you're going to have to throw the ball. We saw volume from McCown. We saw volume from Mariota. We're going to see volume from Cousins here, okay? They're going to try to stay in this game at home, Sunday night, big stage. I like it. Now, on the Raiders side, it's the underneath stuff. Chris Raybon tweeted out a very interesting stat that the cornerbacks for the Redskins have been excellent thus far, limiting passing yards, no touchdowns allowed in coverage to cornerbacks, where their safeties and their linebackers have been the weakness across the middle of the field and underneath intermediate stuff. So Jared Cook, he's in play once again. I hate to say it, but I don't, because I think he's going to be in play a lot. Cooper, I think, will likely be shadowed by Norman, but his route tree as of now, the ADOT is way down, which means he's not the deep ball guy that he was last year. Unless they're trying to set something else up on film and take advantage of deep targets later in the year, I have no idea. I have no idea what they're doing with Del Rio's plan here. If they're just trying to kind of change the way that Cooper's using the offense, maybe that's it. But he's probably going to be shadowed by Josh Norman. So Cook for me is very interesting across the middle, allowing 100 receiving yards and 7 targets per game to the tight end. We saw Zach Ertz eat Jared Cook, no problem with him, especially if they are capable of taking those wide receivers out of the game. I know that Derek Carr will check down. He will have no problem checking into Jared Cook. Dallas at Arizona, the Monday night game. Oh, man. I don't know. I'm going to watch this game with a lot of, like, anxiety for these fan bases, because Arizona's defense has not been what we expect, leaving up a lot of production to the wide receiver. But Dallas's offense is doing weird stuff. They threw the ball 83% of the time against Denver, the best pass defense in the league. What are you doing? You're the best running back in the NFL. Is the most effective? I mean, are they punishing him? Is there an issue that we don't know about? Beyond the Zeke Elliott is kind of an asshole to women, pretty much that's all the quote-unquote conclusive evidence that we have, because it's kind of a mucky situation. It's weird. I don't know what's going on. I got to think, though, that with the way they looked on tape in that Denver game, that they're going to get back to basics. They're going to feed Zeke. Dez is going to see Patrick Patterson. Massive volume lately. And do you think that changes? I don't know, but I just don't like Patrick Peterson on Dez Bryant. I think if you want to go to the other wide receivers, maybe, but I think it's probably this game, is probably a stay away for me. It's very hard to project. Maybe I play Dak. Honestly, maybe I just play Dak. I think Dak could be productive. I just don't know who he's going to give the volume to, because I don't trust Jason Garrett right now. I don't know what he's doing. I heard Warren Sharp talking about this in his podcast. His play calling tendencies are very strange right now. Arizona, oh God, no. You struggle against Indianapolis. No. You almost lost to Indianapolis. The Browns are favored against them. We've learned enough about Arizona. Carson Palmer, he may find some rhythm later in the season and he gets on a little streak. but we're done. We're done with Indianapolis here. I don't think there's any reason, we're done with Arizona. I don't think there's any reason to force the issue against the Dallas team that, you know what, they're going to be looking for blood. They did not like the way that they played last game. I think they're going to come out, correct the errors, and there's just not enough weapons on this Arizona team for me to feel good about their offensive pieces. That is it, ladies and gentlemen. So some really nice, by the way, oh, wow, I just realized I did this. I completely forgot to read the totals for the last couple games here. 45-point total in L.A. Chargers are home dogs. Cincinnati, Green Bay, 45-point total. Green Bay is favored by a touchdown there. Oakland, Washington, 54-point total. Oakland favored by 3. Dallas, Arizona, Dallas favored on the road there by 3 as well. So, highest total, it's that Oakland-Washington game. But then, you know, sneaking up on them, Atlanta and Detroit, that's a good one. And then you get these middle-of-the-road games, Kansas City, the Kansas City-LA game and the Green Bay-Cincinnati game with kind of, you know, that second-tier total. Pittsburgh-Chicago, too. Oh, and the New Orleans-Carolina game. I forgot about that one. All right, guys. Hey, that's it for me. Player breakdown coming tomorrow. If you like the show, throw a review out there. 59 five-star reviews. Let's go. Let's make it 60, huh? Who's going to be number 60? You're the man if you're number 60. Guys, tune in. Player breakdown tomorrow. I will see you then.